This is Jim Engster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. Your number again is 877-217-5757. And you can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. We switch gears. We're now with Marjorie Essman, the veteran civil rights attorney. She is originally from New York, but has spent more than 40 years in the great city of New Orleans. And for a decade, she was head of the ACLU in Louisiana, 2007 to 2017, and one of the top legal eagles in our state. Marjorie Essman, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for that compliment.
Well, we're here to talk about a few different matters, but we are 97 days away from an election, and if it's President Donald John Trump or President Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., they will most likely have at least two appointees to the Supreme Court, and the two oldest members of the court are both Democrats, 87-year-old Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who is truly fighting for her life amid pancreatic cancer, and Stephen Breyer, who turns 82 years old next month. So it would seem that, at the very least, Democrats, if they want to have any kind of momentum on the court, they've got to win this this election, or the President of the United States, Donald Trump, would almost certainly appoint two conservative justices, and we would have a 7-2 majority. What implications does that have for life as we know it moving forward?
Well, you know, Supreme Court justices can be surprising. And what history has shown us is that what a president thinks he's getting, and I say he because it's always been so far, isn't always what he actually gets. And I think Neil Gorsuch this term made that very clear. So does it matter? Of course it matters. It matters a great deal. But it is also true that judicial philosophy can sometimes lead to results that weren't necessarily anticipated. So it's always a little bit of a gamble. And I will say this about Chief Justice Roberts, who since he took over as chief, and certainly in the past several years, has been very adamant that the courts are not political. And he keeps saying there's no such thing as a Republican judge or a Democratic judge. We're judges. We apply the rule of law. This is what we do. And I think as long as Roberts remains chief, he will use his authority to keep the court as apolitical as possible.
It's easier to do that, though, when it's a 4-4 battle on each side. If the votes aren't there, then it doesn't really matter what Judge Roberts thinks. But he was the key vote on several cases, as you know.
And he was
certainly in the Louisiana case.
There were two Louisiana cases. I assume you're referring to the abortion case.
I am.
I assume that. But there was also the case that struck down the almost the last vestige of the unlamented non-unanimous jury law that we had. Now, that was a Louisiana case as well. And in that one, the chief dissented. He did not vote with the majority. But in both cases, it was based on the same theory, which is stare decisis, which is that past Supreme Court rulings, remain the law. And in the abortion decision, I think was a model of moral strength on the part of the chief when he said, I don't like this, I don't agree with this, I voted against it in Texas, and I would vote against it now, except that we've already ruled. And having already ruled, I have to uphold our prior decision. I think that's, a sign of real moral strength.
What was your listener asked? What was your early read on Brett Kavanaugh? And is he as conservative as the president hoped he would be?
Well, it's a little hard to tell. It's too early to really get a read. But it was, the question was an early read, and I think Kavanaugh also has been a little bit of a puzzle. He, too, concurred for different reasons, but the outcome of that non-unanimous jury rule in a very strong opinion. He said, this is an outrage. This is, absolutely horrendous. It was very strong. So Kavanaugh is a little little bit, you know, hard to tell what he's where he's going to land on some of these things.
877-217-5757 for civil rights attorney Marjorie Essman, who headed the ACLU in New Orleans, Louisiana ACLU, for 10 years. And a listener notes that Clarence Thomas, this is Holly in the Garden District, noting that Clarence Thomas just turned 72. I don't know what kind of health he's in. He does appear to be a bit overweight, but 72 by today's standards is a young person for the high court. You couldn't mm-hmm. be a judge in Louisiana. Janice Clark found that out, but
state judge.
But for Clarence Thomas, he could be there a while. There's no indication he's leaving soon, is there?
Well, not that I know of. I mean, I don't have an inside track to Clarence Thomas, but no, I don't see him as on the a short list of justices that is likely to retire anytime soon. And but what do I know? It's certainly a point taken that he is also on the older end of the spectrum.
877-217-5757 for Marjorie Essman. Richard downtown. Richard, you're on the air with Marjorie.
Hey, thanks, Jim. Good morning, Marjorie. I have a question regarding the ethics in Louisiana. Civil servants aren't allowed to endorse any candidates or be involved in any political activity. As far as like campaigning and affiliation, I was curious what your opinion was on that. It kind of restricts a large amount of people in Louisiana that are unable to, stay involved in local politics if they would like.
Yeah, that's a tough one. And as a general matter, I would always oppose any restrictions on anybody's right to express themselves in any way. It's a general matter. That said, I think that the rules on civil service are designed really to protect workers from being compelled to campaign on behalf of their bosses, which may be not the person they really would intend to support, and protect them from retaliation if mm-hmm. they actually speak out in favor of somebody that their boss doesn't like. So with that as background, it's a tough one, but I think on balance, to make sure that you can't be fired in retaliation for your political beliefs is probably a good idea.
We welcome your input. 877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number. Here's Patrick in Innisfail Estates. Patrick, you're on with Marjorie Essman.
Hey, my question is about the ACLU itself. I mean, this is an organization that goes back to 1920 that's always stood for the Constitution and civil liberties, even when unpopular. For example, they were against Japanese being put in internment camps when that was unpopular back then. But now it seems like recently the ACLU, it no longer stands for the Constitution. And I'll give you an example. They oppose landlords' Fifth Amendment, 14th Amendment's rights to the Constitution. There's other examples, but do you feel that the ACLU, especially recently, no longer defends the Constitution? It just.
All right. What about Patrick saying the ACLU has evolved in a bad way?
Well, I'm going to have to disappoint the caller because I'm going to have to say that I left the ACLU 3 years ago. And, I don't speak for them now. I did, of course, for a long time, but I don't anymore. And I have to say that I'm no longer on the inside of what they're doing or why, so I really can't answer that. I see the point, but I can't answer it because I don't know. I'm not there anymore.
Did the ACLU become more politicized after the 88 campaign when George Bush the first accused Mike Dukakis of being, quote, a card-carrying member of the ACLU?
That was a great moment for the ACLU. That was a great moment. No, it did not become more politicized. It may have become more politicized in the minds of the public, many of whom maybe hadn't heard of it, didn't quite know what it was. There are a lot of people who just, don't pay, it's not on their radar and they don't pay attention to that. And so it may have become politicized to folks who were learning about the organization. But no, I mean, to some extent, any organization that makes as its one of its missions suing the government for the government's misconduct is in some ways, by definition, political, but the ACLU has always been nonpartisan. I mean, that I can say, even though I'm no longer involved. It is absolutely nonpartisan and has always defended, as the caller said, unpopular causes, causes on both sides of the political spectrum and everything in between. That I can say for sure. As for what's been going on there since 2017, I can't answer that.
All right, 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Another huge case by the high court on a 5-4 vote. And this was regarding gay people who are in the workplace. They can't be fired because they're gay. Some people think that's that should be a given, but it was a 5-4 vote, and many thought it would go the other way. Your thoughts, Marjorie?
Well, that was also a very interesting case, and that was a majority opinion by Gorsuch, which, again, goes to show that, you know, you don't always get what you think you were getting with a Supreme Court justice, because I think a lot of people did not expect Neil Gorsuch to rule the way he did and write the majority opinion. But that case, again, in many ways can be seen as a model of judicial restraint because it was based on just an absolute literal reading of the words in the statute, Title VII, the non-discrimination laws, which says on the basis of sex. And Gorsuch just said very clearly, look, what that means is if a man can do something and a woman can't do the same thing, that is on the basis of sex, period, end of discussion. And whether that was what Congress intended or not, that's what they said. If they didn't mean it, they could have said something different. That's what they said. So in many ways, that was also a very narrow reading of the words on paper and really a kind of conservative approach.
877-217-5757 is your number. We'll be back after this brief pause with the home stretch with Marjorie Essman, veteran attorney, civil rights attorney, and we'll return after this pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Marjorie Essman, our guest, civil rights attorney. 10 years she was head of the ACLU in Louisiana, but she has noted that she left 2017, so that's been almost 3 years. Talk at talklouisiana.org is our email. James in Metairie. James, good morning. You're on with Marjorie. Hi, James.
Thank you very much, Jim, and good morning, Marjorie. Once again, I just want to thank you for your 10 years. Service as head of the ACLU. You followed up Joe Cook, both champions of liberty. Disturbing article in the Daily Beast this morning. There's a woman by the name of Jenna.
All right. Did we lose James? Let's see if we can get him back. He was talking about an article in the Daily Beast. James usually has good stuff. So, James, let's see if we got you back. Go ahead.
Yeah, Jim, I'm sorry if it's breaking up. This woman, Jenna Ellis, a senior campaign legal advisor to Donald Trump, made the statement that the left is going to, quote, the left is going to tell you that the separation of church and state, and that's just nowhere in the Constitution, nowhere in the law. Well, you know, there are a lot of things that aren't in the Constitution, like the Air Force, for example. Innocent until proven guilty is not in the Constitution. So if that's Trump's legal advisor, you know, Jim had Gene Mills on yesterday, and Gene Mills, in 5.5 years ago, said that he wanted Christians to take over, I think, 7 areas of the country, of the government, education, the legal system, et cetera. Separation of church and state is absolutely imperative to have a free society. Just
All right. Would you respond, Marjorie, to James and Meadow?
Question. I can say that I absolutely agree, and I can say that it is absolutely was the intent of the framers to do that. They were very clear about that. They were very concerned about the establishment of a government religion, and that has been the law in this country, you know, since its founding. So I can only say that I agree with him. I don't know whether there was a question that he wanted me to answer.
All right. Well, we lost him right at the end, but I think he made his point. 877-217-5757. Thank you, as always, James. Randy and Zachary. Hi, Randy. You're on with Marjorie Essman.
Yes, I just want to make a comment on the justices on the Supreme Court. The longer that they sit on the court, the more independent they become. Thanks.
Well, is there really any indication of that, Marjorie? Randy?
He broke up a little.
He said the longer
and I missed the key word.
He says the longer justices are on the court, the more independent they become. I don't know that that's true.
Well, I don't know that it's tied to length of time, but I do understand the point that he's making, and I think that gets back to what I said before, which is, you know, a president doesn't always get what the president thinks they're getting. And it may also be true, and I haven't really examined this in terms of longevity, but the Supreme Court can be very liberating in the sense that, you know, it's the last job you're ever going to have. You can have it for as long as you want, and so it frees you to do things that you weren't able to do before, and to develop a philosophy and an approach of your own in your own way. So in that sense, it may be true that time allows for a certain kind of maturity may be the wrong word because it implies that they're not mature when they get there, but development of a judicial philosophy.
All right. Now, most people
but it also goes back to what I said before, that sometimes they turn out to be surprising.
Most appointees by Democrats try to resign their seat to leave the court when there's a Democrat in office and vice versa. That's kind of a tradition, and it was broken when I think Kennedy left during the Obama year, and there wasn't even a vote on Merrick Garland.
Jim, I lost you. I can't hear you.
Merrick Garland was the choice by President Obama, and Merrick Garland never got a vote. What's your take? A listener asks, like, if something were to happen to Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and hopefully Marjorie can hear what I'm saying, but if something were to happen to her in the home stretch, it seems that there would be a rush by the Republican Senate, led by Mitch McConnell, to get a vote on a new justice President Trump's term ends, not knowing how the election is going to turn out. And if that were the case, that would certainly break precedent with what the same Mitch McConnell did when Merrick Garland was nominated by President Obama and didn't even get a vote with about a year left in the Obama term. McConnell said couldn't do it, too close to the end of a term, and now he has all but said that if something happens to Ginsburg, he's all in, that there would be a vote. And we have lost Marjorie, at least momentarily, but there would seem to be a major political showdown if something terrible were to happen to Ruth Bader Ginsburg in the home stretch of the term for President Trump. What's your take about this? And it's a legitimate question because, as we know, Justice Ginsburg is fighting a grave illness right now.
Well, you know, Jim, I lost you there for a while, and I missed a lot of what you said. But I think what you're asking is, what do I think about what would happen if something were to happen to Justice Ginsburg during a Republican presidency? Is that what you're asking?
That is what I was asking. Yes.
Okay. Well, I think, other than the fact that many people would be very upset, I think it goes back to what I said earlier, which is that obviously with a Republican president, obviously, you know, given the state of her health, it would be President Trump, there would be a push to appoint a hard right justice with strong input from the Federalist Society, which has a list of conservative judges that they maintain and groom for appointment. That said, they can put up somebody who would be very conservative and then be surprised and disappointed when that person as a justice does things they didn't anticipate, such as Gorsuch writing the majority opinion in this employment discrimination case. I don't think that anybody anticipated that coming from him. I don't think that anybody anticipated Chief Justice Roberts taking the position that he did in the abortion case, which is, I don't like it, but I have to uphold our prior rulings, therefore I have to vote against my own conscience. So you don't know, really, what you're going to get. And I think that we have to just assume that anybody with the strength of character to get nominated, to clear ABA endorsement, to clear the Senate and get appointed, would have enough conscience that they would do what they believe is right.
All
now,
right.
There's difference of opinion, of course, and what they think is right isn't necessarily what somebody else thinks is right, but you just never know what you're going to get.
No, you don't. Now, here's a political question from Kathleen, and you, of course, are a woman who has been in public life for a long time, and of course, I'm sure you've faced discrimination in your time. Kathleen asks why no member of the Louisiana Republican House delegation, Scalise, Graves, Abraham, Higgins, Johnson, why no member has criticized Representative Ted Yahoo of Florida for calling Representative Ocasio-Cortez of New York an effing bitch. Why hasn't anyone from Louisiana come forward to denounce their colleague in the great state of Florida?
I wish I could answer that question. Obviously, I don't know what's inside the heads of these men. Clearly, it is absolutely unacceptable for anybody in any workplace to call another a colleague by any kind of epithet. Clearly unacceptable behavior. Why the members of the Louisiana delegation have not seen fit to chastise one of their own for saying something that's unacceptable, I don't know. I wish they would.
And Scalise, in particular, is in a leadership position. Representative Yahoo actually answers to Steve Scalise in the Republican ranks. But Steve Scalise, who opines about any number of things, he's been suspiciously silent on this.
And I can only, and, you know, as I don't know, I'm not in their heads, but I can only assume that it has become a partisan issue. You know, AOC is a divisive figure. Republicans don't like her because she speaks her mind. And they don't like what she has to say, but she certainly, you know, doesn't hesitate to say it. And I can only assume that it would be taken as an act of political treachery to come to her defense, even when it's on something like having been called something that she should not have been called and having to endure something from a colleague that she should not have had to endure.
All right. Final caller for Marjorie Essman today, Sabash at the Country Club of Louisiana. Hi, Sabash.
Good morning, Ms. Engster. Good morning, Ms. Marjorie. I respect and appreciate Ms. Marjorie for being ex-ACLU attorney, but I beg to differ about her opinion that the justices may not be what the president thinks. We are not going to wait until the person evolves. We want the justice to be a justice from day one. So, you know, we haven't seen Mr. Thomas evolve at all. So I really don't think that we can depend on the possibility that the justice can become a better person.
All right. Well, there have been cases through the years in which justices went against script. David Souter, appointed by Bush, turned out to be a liberal. Wizard White, appointed by Kennedy, turned out to be a conservative. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Earl Warren is a classic. And first, I want to say I completely agree. We don't want to take a gamble. We don't want to say, well, you know, we're not so sure what you say now, but we're going to hope that you're going to evolve into something in the future. My point was not that that's what we want. My point is that that's what often happens. And so you can't always be sure that what they say now is what they will say in the future.
Thank you, Marjorie Essman. It is always a pleasure to talk with you. Signature support comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Back tomorrow. Stay tuned.